I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Friday, December 11th, 2020, and this is episode 98 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week's best thing. I had a really cool thing that I can't actually talk about, and I hate when people do that, and I'm not going to belabor it, but I did want to acknowledge that. But I also had one that I can talk about, which is Once Upon a Winter Ever After, which was an event that was held by St. Martin's Press, SMP Romance, and Forever, their lines. And it was four authors getting together to write a story live on video during the event, and it was so much fun. So it was Lily Manon, Nancy Nagel, and Farah Rashan, and me. And then the hosts were from St. Martin's Press, DJ, and Marissa, and I don't know if I can say their last names properly, so. They were fantastic, and they were sort of like live commentators on this the sport of live online writing, because they were putting the Google Doc that we were writing on the screen. So it was basically a short romance story, or all romance authors, and with input from the audience. So there were polls that had happened before and during the event, and so they chose the characters' names and the activity that they were going to be doing. And so I was third out of four, and it was just like we would write for about 5 minutes and then pass the torch onto the next person. We had these elements that we would get when it was our turn that we had to include. So in that way, I think I'd mentioned it was like the 48-hour film project, which, you know, is something I used to participate in a lot. But at the same time, y'all know I'm a plotter. I'm not a pantser. I don't just like sit down and start writing and not knowing anything. And I was getting nervous. And as I wasn't super nervous before, but when the event started and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to actually have to do this. And everyone's going to see me typing live on screen. And how is that going to work? So a little behind the scenes action. This is the anatomy of the live writing event. I was taking notes throughout. Lily Manon was the first writer, and she started out strong. I mean, she had this great setup. It was, you know, the hero and heroine were in this snowman building competition, and the heroine, Simone was her name, and I really had to win. She was like, I really need to win this thing. But in the time allotted, Lily never got to why she needed to win. So I was like, okay, why does she need to win? What are the stakes? What is the motivation here? And I have my remarkable digital notebook out that I'm scribbling the notes in. And so I wrote down their names. I wrote down the, you know, basic incident that they were strangers, and then they were building snow people. And then she ends hers on this sort of cliffhanger where the wind has kicked up and a scarf wraps around both of their necks and it ties them together. It's like one of these ridiculous, you know, kind of Hallmarky romance situations. So then Nancy Nagel comes in and she continues it really strong. They have this conversation. They fall into the snow person that Simone was making, ruining it. But he helps her, Flynn is his name. He helps her fix it. And then, I forget exactly where she ended, but so I was like, okay, he's helping her with her creation. Like, why is he doing that? What are his motivations? What are his stakes? Why is he in this competition? And so I wrote down conflict. Both need to win the prize, but I don't know what the prize is. So the element that I had to include in my story was a kitten. They had voted on three different animals. And I was like, okay, it's a kitten rescue. So my part of the story was that she had to win because she had to have enough money to fund her kitten rescue, because she had found a box of kittens on the side of the road and she didn't have enough money to foster them out. And he had known about her kitten rescue and knew she was going to be in the contest and entered the contest just to meet her, because she's all like, why are you helping me? And then we give it off to Farah Rashan at the end and she brings it home. I teed it up for her and she took it home. And it turns out that he had lost a kitten, or his cat recently had passed away, and he was looking at the kitten rescue, and then he was going to enter because he's a master snowman creator, and he won the contest and gave her the check. And then they go off with their hot chocolate, and they're happily, for now, happily ever after. And it was a lot of fun. But it's like, yeah, when it was my turn to write, like the pressure was on, you know, because not only am I on camera, but then they've zoomed in on this Google Doc as I'm typing. And so I started typing and it was going well. And then at one point, my brain shut down. I was at a line of dialogue and I'm like, And I was like, does this make any sense at all? And then I was like, but does it need to? Because we're writing a story in 5 minutes, with 5 minutes each on screen. So I was like, let's just go for it. So I just like shed the normal fear and obsessiveness and was just like, yes, we're just going to go for whatever happens, whatever poor, you know, craft things that are going on, or poor story things that are going on, because it's not possible to do this, like, quote unquote, right. But from the comments, people seem to like it. They liked the kitten rescue. They were surprised by it. Because I was like, I'm all in for this kitten thing. Like, let's do it. The other ideas I'd had before I had the idea of the kitten rescue was maybe she was trying to fund her hot chocolate stand. It was basically just like, why does she need to win? And so I focused on the craft things that I understood, like stakes, motivation, and just grabbed onto whatever tidbits that I could that the other authors had given me. And also keeping in mind that I have to leave Farah something to do and try to, you know, give her a good place to pick up the story from. So yeah, that was my highlight of my week. I don't know the final title of the story. I can't remember. But there were several suggestions about like Christmas rescue, a perfect reunion or perfect union, like purr kittens. So I will link to the actual video where you can watch it in real time. And they are going to post the finished story on their newsletter. And so I'll leave a link for that. I think it's the SMP Romance newsletter. And so, yeah, you'll get a chance to check out the finished story. It's very cute and very silly. In other writing news, in non-on-the-spot improv writing news, this week was again about research, digging deeper, and also plotting. So I started thinking plot, character development, I did work on those. I needed to understand the villain more. I had to dig a little deeper into the magic system, the quote-unquote magic system, because it's much softer magic than in Earthsinger. In this new book that I'm writing, the 1920s fantasy heist, which I need to come up with another way to describe it because it is fantasy and it is a heist, but I think it's just a softer version of all of those things. And even as I try to make it more heisty, I just don't know that I'm going to make it. It's not going to be like an Ocean's 11 level heist because they're not professional criminals. And they're people who've been brought together for a reason to steal a thing that they need to steal. But and they're not like bumbling, but this is not their job. One of them is a criminal, but and several of them have criminal-ish skills. But yeah, I'm still just in that process. I feel closer. I feel so much closer. And I'm going back to connect to my why, you know. I read a great blog post by the author Kate Messner that was linked to somewhere on social media, and she talks about having an index card with the vision of it, and it kind of really aligned with what I do and how I started this process with going back to why am I writing the story? What does it mean to me? What is important to the story? What is important about the story to me, you know? And so I drilled it down to one sentence, and then I got an index card and wrote that down. So it's in my Scrivener, but it's also right in front of my face. I have it here on my magnetic whiteboard that is on my desk. And I'm just, every time I come into a question or a dilemma, I try to focus back in on, okay, what is the purpose of this? What are the major themes? Why am I writing this in the first place? What about the story is interesting and meaningful to me that I'm devoting all this time to it? So I'm trying to use that as the touchstone. And I think it's a good idea because I get lost in the possibilities. I realized I have to change my main character's job. I decided that she had a certain job, and then I'm like, no, I needed to do some more work. And there's more opportunities there for the character growth. And so now I'm researching the types of jobs that she could have that were reasonable. And even if it's not completely reasonable, even if it's like a push, that's okay. But I mean, even in 1925, women were doing all kinds of jobs, and even Black women were doing all kinds of things. So yeah, research, character development, vision, that's kind of what this has been about. I also had to take a day or two to step back and organize my research. I've been keeping all of this research in Scrivener, And it's great because of the way that Scrivener is set up. I can have the folders and the different files inside one document. So I can, and I was kind of, I had a bunch of different documents with a bunch of different things with the idea that, you know, I didn't want everything in one big document, which is why I can't write in Word. That's why I love Scrivener. But it just needed more like fine tuning. So what I have is history, which has a bunch of different articles about just bits and pieces of actual history. Like I have one on Pullman Porters, I have one on policy gambling, I have one on bootlegging, and then I've got locations. So basically the only location right now is Washington, D.C., and I've split that up into different sections. So kind of in overall places and in just little blurbs about different locations that I've discovered, and then one on U Street and Shaw, the neighborhood in which the story takes place. And that's way more detailed. I break it down into the kinds of businesses. That was what I was talking about last week with the maps, so I could plot out things. The clubs, the theaters, the pool halls, eateries, barbershops, miscellaneous. Then I've got also crime and prison, a document for that, a document on like social. It is called social, but because DC at that time and with the Black community had very stringent, like a social caste system, that's from where my research about that goes. I have some on the real people that I'm going to be putting in this book, or that I hope to put in. Not all of them are in the outline right now, but I think I'm going to be able to squeeze a few more real life characters in there. Then I have a folder for magic systems. And then a folder for events. And the only thing in there right now was World War I. But there are other events that I think I'm going to have to put in there. And then I just have a catch-all folder for research, which one of the cool things about Scrivener is that you can save a copy of a website page in case the site goes down or something. So I've got some of the web pages that I've used and then just other miscellaneous research things that may or may not make it into the actual book. But so I had these things, but I still had things scattered around because when I'd find something, I would just dump it. And I needed to take a day or two, like a day and a half in terms of my writing time to organize it better, to try to do like a table of contents for the bigger pieces, the bigger documents, and make sure things were where they're supposed to be so I can find them more easily. And that was time well spent. And also kind of taking a step back from just the focus on the plot and character allows my mind to sort of work on it in the background. And so it gives me time away from the story, which is important to me, while I'm still working on things that are useful and helpful for the overall project. So that's sort of what I've been working on. And yeah, with this research, it's like one of those things where people often ask, oh, what time in the past would you like to live in? And I'm like, none of them. No time in the past was really great for me. And looking at 1925, and I'm listening to this audiobook, and just seeing all of the parallels and seeing all of the things they're working for that we are still working for. And I know I've talked about this before, but it just every time I see something new, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, in the late 1890s, the different organizations and groups, which were lobbying Congress and the presidents and trying to get equal rights. Because after Reconstruction, there was a period of, you know, prosperity for some. You know, we had Black people in Congress and the Senate, and things were looking up. And people were like, oh, you know, discrimination is going to be a thing of the past. This is 1890s. And so then things start backsliding towards the end of the century, and then they get backslid even further. And, you know, 1925, we're still really far away from the civil rights movement of the 60s, which is still really far away from now. And it's always the same thing, you know, like it gets better and then it gets worse. And it's also interesting to me to juxtapose it to like Barack Obama. So if you look at Reconstruction and Barack Obama and these periods of great achievement, and you're thinking, we're in a post-racial society. They didn't use that exact language back then, but that was the idea. Like, we're doing well. We're going to just blow past all of these prejudices and the laws, you know, the with the amendments, I'm trying to think, the 13th, 14th, 15th amendments to the Constitution, like black men had the right to vote and you weren't supposed to discriminate. And then backslide. So I look at Obama, high point, achievement, first black president. And now we're in the backslide because it's never that easy. And the progress is always so hard fought. And we could be in a backslide for decades. You know, if you think about Reconstruction to the 60s, it's like 90 years. So yeah, it's interesting and painful. And the challenge that I've set myself is to write an entertaining novel that takes place in this period that is not strife and woe, but is grounded in that as being the reality. And so it's not any different from writing a book in any other period of time, because there's always strife and woe happening as a background for some group of people. And if you're writing the story of the group of people for whom it's happening to, it doesn't have to be a story about that, but that's there. You know, that's always there. It's always, it's the milieu, it's the paradigm, you know. Hopefully I will actually start writing words in the story in the next 2 weeks. That is my goal. And even if I'm not completely done with all the stuff I think I need to get done, I think it's important that I get to the word writing, because that will also illuminate things and make things clearer in my mind. Our featured podcast this month is the Mermaid Podcast, and here's a word from them.
Hi, I'm Laura Von Holt from the Mermaid Podcast, part of the Frolic Podcast Network. The Mermaid Podcast is, you guessed it, all about mermaids. I cover everything from mermaid legend and history to mermaids in pop culture, movies, and TV. My guests include mermaid experts, mermaid historians, mermaid authors, mermaid charities, mermaid tale makers, and even professional mermaids. Yes, being a mermaid is a real job. So whether you have legs or fins, are a mermaid queen or a mermaid at heart, the Mermaid Podcast has something for you. You can find us at mermaidpodcast.com and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Other things that were cool this week. Alice Smith, who is one of my favorite singers, she did this live concert. So you basically bought the ticket and it was a live stream. I didn't actually watch it live. You could watch it afterwards. And she is apparently in her house, you know, with a professional setup, microphone, multiple cameras, and giving a concert. And so I got tickets to the concert with the unreleased music and then a released music, because she had an album that was shelved, record company stuff. And I had actually supported a Kickstarter with her several years ago. And so I have one of the only like CDs of this unreleased music. And some of my favorite songs from her were actually not released. And so she did them at this concert. And it's also songs that I'd seen her do live. Like I've seen her many times live. But they're just hard to get because the album didn't come out. And I don't know, for whatever, it's probably legal reasons why she can't release it. I have no idea. So that was really fun. She's an entertaining performer because she's completely unhinged, but I love her so much. And her voice is amazing. So yes, if you haven't listened to Alice Smith, definitely check her out. She had a new album that I kind of missed. I didn't realize she had, what do they call those short ones? EP that came out last year. So I'm behind. I need to catch up. But that was a lot of fun. I also managed to read a book, the new Noelle Adams book. Noelle Adams is a contemporary author who is just an auto-buy for me because her books are very like realistic in the fact that they're low angst. I don't know how to put this. They're low angst, but they're about everyday problems that relationships have. And somehow she manages not to have them be big misunderstandings. They're like misunderstandings. There's usually the conflict, but it works because it's so grounded in reality and like psychology. I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but they're very comforting reads because I know nothing's going to go too wrong. And these people are going to, I mean, it's a romance, they're going to get together, which you always know, but some authors really like to drag you through the ringer. And Noah Adams does not do that. And her brand is kind of lighthearted, very grounded in realism, very natural dialogue and like interactions with people. And plus one of my favorite tropes, which is marriage of convenience. And this one was purchased husband, which I recommend if you're looking for something nice and sweet to read. It's the fourth in the series of all these different kinds of marriages of convenience, but total standalone, although I recommend basically everything that she writes. And her pen name, Claire Kent, does like sci-fi stuff. I'm trying to see what else that pen name does. But yeah, Noah Adams will always be an auto buy for me. And it's been hard for me to find time to read, especially with the new dog. Because if I sit down, she's in my face and she like always wants to have attention. And I have to keep an eye on her because she will destroy things if not watched. Like you can tell her to stop, but you have to be watching her. And if she's trying to chew on your shoelaces or like a blanket or something, just weird stuff. She tries to chew on the end of the coffee table, which is different. So yeah, finding time to read has been difficult, and just mental and just quieting my mind down. I think my mind has been very busy this week, the past few weeks. So my goals for this upcoming week are to get the plot of the book like pinned down more or shaped more. I'm changing a lot from the first draft. And I always change a lot, but at this time I'm like adding characters. Like I said, I'm changing her job. I'm doing things that I feel like I don't usually do things on that level. Like a lot of times it's just about the actions that they take, but the first draft, the person is kind of the same. I mean, her qualities are the same. Her personality is the same, but I don't know. I think I'm just changing a lot of things that needed to be changed. I'm just wondering. This is a hard one. Every book is a different challenge. And I really am interested in making each one better than the last one and setting something in the real past is a big challenge for me. Like, I'm happy to take on the challenge because I need to keep testing myself. You know, I don't want to get in a rut. And I'm just feeling it. You know, I'm just feeling the difficulty of the thing I'm trying to do, even as I'm not, like, I have this vague notion of this thing that I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to clarify it for myself so that when I start writing words, they're going to be like this vision that I've written down. But it's, the vision statement is vague and a book is very specific and a book is about people and characters and emotions. And I want to focus on that and keep that at the front of my mind while I'm also thinking about all these other things. And that balance between like this entertaining story that is, exciting and adventurous and lives up to heist. And also I'm really interested in this time period and what people were going through and sinking into that and like putting myself in that mindset, which is also difficult, put myself in the mindset of Black people living in 1925, and everything that entails. It's a different challenge than I did in Earthsinger because I was extrapolating real life prejudices and putting them in this fantasy world, which is easier, in a way, because I found this directory of people and businesses. And the last one I found was, I think, 1921, I believe. And I found my great-grandfather in it, which is awesome. Because I was looking for my relatives. My mother's family moved to D.C., I think my grandmother was born in D.C. and her people came from North Carolina. And so, I know the names and there's only one Ashley Austin Hines in the directory. And I found him in 1921. And my grandmother would have been 12 or 13 then. So she's not in there. But I was thinking about, my family members. So putting myself in the real life, in the real time period, in a place where my ancestors lived
and struggled and no doubt suffered in various ways. It's a hard thing that I have decided to do on many different levels, emotionally draining as well as creatively hard and all the other things. So I'm giving myself a lot of grace and I'm taking the pressure off. And I'm glad that I don't have a specific deadline. I have a target date that I would like to have this book finished by, but it's just going to take some time to sink into it and figure out exactly how I get from this vision statement to an entertaining book that I can write, but will still have heft to it and meaning to it beyond the actual plot and story beats, you know? But yeah, I do. I feel emotionally drained after every research session, and it is a different kind of strain than the creative exhaustion that you can often feel after writing, like a writing session. So combined, I've been exhausted, and I think this is why, you know, because I was wondering, am I stressed? I'm not stressed. I don't have a deadline. It's not like anybody is beating down my door asking for this, but I've been having some of the like stress symptoms, and I think it is sinking into this time period, this world, and all of that on top of the plot and getting it into the place where I want it to be. So anyway, my goals are to keep doing this because it is worthwhile, and I think it's a story worth telling, and I'm so excited about it. But yeah, I have to manage my emotions about it and my energy around it. So I think that is it for me for this week. Christmas is coming. I've almost finished my Christmas shopping. I have already alerted people that things may or may not get here by Christmas, but I'm doing my best. And happy Hanukkah. I believe Hanukkah is now, right? And I got a brand new review from Paradiso DX. So I just wanted to give a shout out and a thank you to them. It's a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and the title is Excellent Podcast on Writing. This is the best podcast I've encountered on the process of writing, publishing, and editing by one of our best contemporary writers. It's very nice. They go on to say all kinds of other nice things. So thank you very much. And if you would like to leave a review, you can do so on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. So I'll talk to you next week, and I hope that you have a wonderful week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcast.